Hello, hello. Here's Marlenka once again, the last time for this year, with another episode from Sri Aurobindo's essays, Divine and Human. It is this unchanging, undying truth which has to be discovered and placed in its native light before humanity. Tad etat satyam. Now, there are many defenders and discoverers of truth now active among us. They are all busy defending, modifying, attacking, sapping or bolstering current Hinduism. I am not eager to disparage, but neither do I find myself satisfied with any of them. If I were, there would be no need for any speculation of my own. There are the Orthodox, who are busy recovering and applying old texts or any interpretations, new or old, of these texts, which will support the existing order, and ignoring all that go against it. And their learning is praiseworthy and useful. It brings to notice many great and helpful things which were in danger of being misprized, lost, or flung away as worthless. But they do not seem to me to go to the heart of the matter. There are the heterodox who are busy giving new interpretations to old texts and institutions in order to get rid of all such features as the modern world finds it hard to assimilate. Their brain work can hardly be too highly praised. It is bringing to light, or to a half light, many luminous realities and possibilities which, if they cannot all be accepted, yet invigorate and sharpen the habit of original thinking, and help to remove that blind adherence to traditions which is truth's greatest obstacle. Still, they too do not seem to me to have the right grasp and discernment. Then there are the ascetics, mystical or rationalistic, who call men to disgust with the world and point to the temple, the monastery, or the mountaintop as the best, if not the only place, for finding God. And most of whom, in order to honor the Maker, slight and denounce his works. Their position and temperament is so lofty and noble, and their solvent force on the gross impurities of a materialized humanity has been so invaluable that it is with some reluctance one finds oneself obliged to put them on one side and pass onward. But it seems to me that we must pass onward if we would know and possess God in his entirety and not merely in a side or aspect. There's a story in the Jewish scriptures which relates that when God wished to show himself to Moses, he could only, owing to the spiritual imperfections of the Jewish prophet, reveal safely to him his hinder parts. Moses would have died if he had seen the front of God. He had not the dharanam, the soul power to support that tremendous vision. The story well illuminates the character of materialism generally and to its aggressive modern form, European thought and civilization. It applies with a quite overwhelming appositeness. But it seems to me that the average Vedantist too has only seen, for his part, the crown of the Lord's head. And the average Bhakta only the kastub stone over his heart, or the Sri Vatsa mark upon it. On the other hand, There are those rationalists who are by no means ascetical in their views or temperament, and their name is Legion. They insist on our putting religion and God aside, or keeping him only for ornamental uses in spare moments. Leave that, they say, and devote yourselves to practical work for mankind. That rationalism is necessary, too, if only to balance the error of the ascetics who would make of God's world a mistake, and of its maker an almighty blunderer, or an inscrutable eccentric, or an indefinable something inhabiting a chaos or a mirage. Nevertheless, from materialism least of all, however philanthropic or patriotic, can our future salvation be expected. Finally, there are the mystics who are not ascetics, the theosophists. From one point of view, I cannot find praise warm enough to do justice to the work of theosophy. From another, I cannot find condemnation strong enough to denounce it. It has forced on the notice of an unwilling world truths to which orthodoxy is blind, and of which heterodoxy is afraid or incredulous. It has shown a colossal courage in facing ridicule, trampling on prejudice and slander, persisting in faith in spite of disillusionment, scandal, and a continual shifting of knowledge. They have kept the flag of a past and future science flying against enormous difficulties. On the other hand, by bringing to the investigation of that science, not its discovery, for to the Hindu yogin it is known already, the traditional European methods, the methods of the marketplace and the forum, it has brought on the truths themselves much doubt and discredit. So by importing into them the forms, jugglery, and jargon of European mystics, their romanticism, their unbridled imagination, their galloping impatience, their haste, bragging, loudness, their susceptibility to dupery, trickery, obstinate error, and greedy self-deception, why, the theosophists have strengthened doubt and discredit and driven many an earnest seeker to bewilderment, to angry suspicion, or to final renunciation of the search for truth. They have scattered the path of conscientious investigators, the severe scientists of yoga who must appear in the future, with the thorns and sharp flints of a well-justified incredulity and suspicion. Now, I admit the truths that theosophy seeks to unveil, but I do not think they can be reached if we fall into bondage even to the most inspiring table talk of Mahatmas or to the confused anathemas and vaticinations hurled from their platform tripods by modern Pythonises of the type of Miss Annie Besant, that great, capacious, but bewildered and darkened intellect, now stumbling with a loud and confident blindness through those worlds of twilight and glamour, of distorted inspirations, perverted communications, and misunderstood or half-understood perceptions which are so painfully familiar to the student and seeker. If these things do not satisfy me, what then do I seek? I seek a light that shall be new, yet old, the oldest indeed of all lights. I seek an authority that, accepting, illuminating, and reconciling all human truth, shall yet reject and get rid of by explaining it all mere human error. I seek a text and a shastra that is not subject to interpolation, modification, replacement, that moth and white ant cannot destroy, that the earth cannot bury nor time mutilate. I seek an asceticism that shall give me purity and deliverance from self and from ignorance without stultifying God and His universe. I seek a skepticism that shall question everything but shall have the patience to deny nothing that may possibly be true. I seek a rationalism not proceeding on the untenable supposition that all the centuries of man's history, except the 19th, were centuries of folly and superstition, but bent on discovering truth instead of limiting inquiry by a new dogmatism, obscurantism, and furious intolerance, which it chooses to call common sense, enlightenment. I seek a materialism that shall recognize matter and use it without being its slave. I seek an occultism that shall bring out all its processes and proofs into the light of day, without any mystery, without jugglery, without the old stupid call to humanity, "Be blind, O man, and see." In short, I seek not science, not religion, not theosophy, but Veda, the truth about Brahman, not only about his essentiality, but about his manifestation. Not a lamp on the way to the forest, but a light and a guide to joy and action in the world, the truth which is beyond opinion, the knowledge which all thought strives after. I believe that Veda to be the foundation of the Sanatana Dharma. I believe it to be the concealed divinity within Hinduism. But a veil has to be drawn aside, a curtain has to be lifted. I believe it to be knowable, discoverable. I believe the future of India and the world to depend on its discovery and on its application, not to the renunciation of life, but to life in the world and among men. Well, that seems to be a good stopping point for today. Until next time, next year, goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.